Twitter comment really quick. Are you posting on it as if you're not on the show?
No, I don't think so.
Did you write, like, excellent episode, can't wait to hear the next one?
Oh, as Joe, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did.
You can't do that.
Why not?
I didn't say that. Because people are going to know that you're on the show. That's embarrassing. Don't do that.
You don't want me to put excellent episode?
No, because you're in it.
Okay. So I can't say we did an excellent episode?
You're not saying that. You're saying, like, excellent episode. Can't wait to hear the next one. Like, as if you're a fan of the show, not, like,
that's
in
true.
It.
That's true. All right. All right, I won't do
it's
that
It's like
anymore.
You're tricking everybody. I like you're a fake fan, but we already tagged you in the
that's
post.
True. I'm a phony. I'll take that post down. All right. Well, I'm learning about Twitter. Welcome to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. It's the podcast where we talk about everything Wheel of Time as it pertains to the upcoming Amazon Prime television show. I'm your host, Joe Perry. I'm here with my co-host, Jen Isgrow. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Joe.
And also with Tom Kokoza. How are you doing today, Tom?
Excited as always, Joe.
Good. You've sound it.
That's good.
Yes, yes.
I'm living the lie.
Yeah. So on this episode, we wanted to review any news that's happened with casting or anything show production. The only thing we've seen so far is that they have begun principal photography.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
Yes, very exciting. So the rumors were true. So that's good news, I think. So if we start hearing rumors, it seems to be that they're true. So they did start on September 16th, which was just this past Monday, although when this releases, it might be 2 Mondays ago. And it happened to also be the anniversary of Robert Jordan's death. 12 years ago, he passed away. So I saw Rafe Judkins had posted a video on Twitter just announcing the principal photography had begun and also like a little commemoration of Robert Jordan. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, that is nice. The thing about the rumors being true, I just want to mention that's how I live my life. All rumors I hear, I just assume are true. And it's served me well so far. But
it must be a very exciting life then.
It is. Do you know we both did and did not land on the moon? It's like short. So I'm very excited about principal photography, and I'm very confused because you would think at this point we would know more people who are in the show.
Yes, I agree with you there. And that was my thought, is how much can you film with just those 7 characters? And you know, have they cast other people and we're just doing a poor job of digging up the dirt? I mean, they're in Prague, so I guess it's not like it's here. So it's...
Maybe they're saving it for Wheel of Time Wednesdays.
Yeah, but usually stuff like that leaks, right? Someone sees something and then they post it. You know, I don't know.
It is possible that they're filming like early travel stuff from like, you know, the first third of the books, like when they're just, you know, traveling to Taran Ferry or to Berylyn or to Shadar Logoth, and there's no other characters, or like stuff when they're fighting, you know, Trollocs and Dar, you know, and Halfmen and whatnot. So like there's no characters of note, you know, actors of note. It's possible they're doing that stuff, or maybe principal photography is starting by them filming locations and they're doing like B-roll footage.
That's true. I did see Joshua Stradowski had posted a little clip video of him in Prague, and there was like a clip of like a training facility. So I guess he was getting in shape or practicing maybe his sword fighting.
It's really in the first book, it's more just practicing him running and pretending to know how to use a sword.
Well, he gets Lan trains him, right? That's when he starts training him on their journey.
That's true.
So what we really wanted to get into this episode is one of the big, huge, I guess, all-encompassing main themes, or I guess main, I don't even want to know what the word is, but things that in this whole book series is the Robert Jordan's magic, so to speak, and it's called channeling. So we want to talk about channeling. We want to talk about what it is, maybe talk about some other movies or TV shows and how they use magic, and then talk about how we think they're going to be doing channeling and how they're going to visualize it.
Right.
So, Jen, I know you've been studying up for this episode on channeling.
I have.
Do you want to give us a brief overview of channeling?
Of what channeling is?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, don't use all the words I was going to use.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Channeling is split into two parts, men and women. The true source is the power, and then the one power, I guess, is it kind of the same thing?
The one power comes from the true source.
The true source, which is what turns the Wheel of Time. Women use Sidar and Manu Saidin, and they work together and they kind of oppose each other but also work together to, like I said, turn the wheel of time. At the beginning of this book, Saidin has been tainted by the Dark One, which is, I guess, the devil. So men actually cannot channel, or the ones that can end up dying, going crazy. So the women who can channel, who are called Aes Sedai, actually men and women, I believe, were both called Aes Sedai
a long time ago, in the Age of Legends.
Yeah, now just women who can still channel will try to find the men who can channel and gentle them, take the channeling away from them. Mostly the red, well, I'm getting so ahead of myself. But the Aes Sedai are the main channelers when the book series starts, and those are the women. And there's five elements, I don't know if they call it that, that you can channel.
The five powers, yeah.
Five powers, air, fire, water, earth, and spirit? Is that the last one?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Kind of like Captain Planet, but not exactly.
Yeah. And kind of people have affinities, right? So typically women are stronger in air and water, and men are stronger in earth and fire, and then they're equal kind of in spirit.
Right.
And some people have affinities for others. Like Egwene is very strong in earth, which is not typical.
Right.
I think there's others. Yeah.
There's affinities for like a particular power, and then there's talents within power. Like you saw, like Nynaeve has the power of, has a talent for healing.
Right.
Both Swan and Loghain have the talent to see Ta'veren. Right. So there's different talents, and there's affinities in the power.
Yes.
But so how does it work, Jen? How does channeling the one power work?
You have to, they cast what they call weaves.
Okay.
And so when men cast, they say it feels like they have to control the power. And when women cast, they have to submit themselves to the power. Yeah, so they cast weaves in the air, which I kind of picture, I know it's supposed to be, I guess, like threads coming together. I kind of picture it as like braiding hair kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they have different things they call Angreal, which can make the power stronger through them.
Yeah, it's pretty in depth. And I think this, so something I wanted to bring up, like older fantasy type stuff, novels, television, movies, it's very like basic. Like they never really get too much into like how the magic works.
Right.
Or it's very like specific to one thing, like there's a magic book or a magic wand. But like in later fantasy, you kind of see more depth in the magic systems, like Brandon Sanderson's books. He's got very like detailed magic. It's almost like they follow like scientific rules or things.
There's almost mechanical systems for magic usage, right? And Jordan has a background as a engineer, I think, right?
He was like a physics major or something.
Yeah, so he definitely was one of the people to really make having magical systems, like magic systems that made sense and had logic or thought behind them, you know, as a prominent thing. And you see that especially as the books progress in how the one power is used, like all the different levels that people have. We talked about the talents and affinities and how that interplays, that affects social dynamics too. So with that, the fact that you have to know how to do these different weaves and whatnot, it's something that plays out, like, and that there's a whole bunch of interplay about, like, if you don't know how to use the weave correctly, you can hurt yourself, or it can do something that you didn't expect it to do. And then there's later on things about unweaving weaves, which is like, you know, it's like very it's very in depth, and it can be very it could be something that people are eyes go crossed when they're watching on TV if they delve too far into that.
I'm just going to say there's probably a lot of this they won't use because it's just too complicated, but they'll have to use, I think, like the idea of the weaves and like I was going to say too, that they can form like a circle to get more power through each other. Men and women can come together after a certain number of women. There has to be a man in the circle.
That's right.
So they can kind of work together with the different powers.
Yeah. That's right, right? It's 13 women, and then you need a man, right, to continue adding them.
So.
But for the men, to get more than one man, you need another woman, right?
Two men can't link. You need at least one woman for a man to be participant in a link. And I think the numbers always have to be more women than men. Like, you can't do one woman and two men, but you can do two women and one man. Yeah, that's I totally just overlooked the whole linking thing. And that's something that I agree with you. They're definitely going to want to mention because that's a thematic thing that pays off. Because really, you don't see circles of men and women working together until what? Like Winter's Heart, I think.
Yeah.
I think it might be. Yeah.
I think it's when you first really see them working together. And then by the end, they're like rediscovering things that have been lost since the Age of Legends, right? They make power weapons and do all sorts of things.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of stuff to work with, and they don't have to bring all of this up in the first season, I think, because I don't know if they mention linking in the first book. I mean, Maureen might bring it up, and then like you don't find out about things like tying off weaves or like you said unraveling weaves, which doesn't happen till I think much later. I think is that the end of the first one we see does that?
Yeah, I think that's also Winter's Heart.
And Elaine, I think, does it too. Hello, Elaine's, I think, winds up backfiring or something. It blows up right in her face.
Yeah, but that's actually one of the things that, just a quick aside about that, is it's one of my favorite things that happens because it's totally, it's just an offhand comment, but she tries to unravel a gateway weave and it explodes, like in this huge explosion. And then the Shanshan assume that Aes Sedai have some kind of super powerful weapon because of that.
Boy.
And like it holds off their attack for like another book or two because they know of this incredibly devastating attack that they're capable of.
Yeah. And then there's also the visualization of it, right? Women can see other women when they embrace the source. They could see a glow around them and they could see when they weave, but the women can't see when men channel. And vice versa. Men can't see when women channel, although we find out men get kind of like an itching or a tingling sensation when women channel.
Women can sense that men can channel. I saw that. I'm looking it up.
I know some of them have.
Because men can't sense. Men can't tell if a woman can channel. They can only feel it when they're channeling, like a little bit.
Yes.
They can't see who's channeling.
Yeah, they get like a tingling sensation.
But now I'm trying to see what, because I feel like I read that today.
Women cannot tell when men are channeling. Some of them have like, Cad Swain has a Tirangriel.
Right.
And I think Nynaeve winds up getting one where it allows them to sense men channeling.
Yeah. They have no sense of men channeling. Men know that women are channeling when they do. And women can see each other, embrace the true source and see each other channel. But men can't see someone embrace the true source, but they can feel it. They can feel that you have like the power, the amount of power you have inside, like that you're holding to channel. So
can men see other men's weaves though? I think they can, right?
Yeah. I think anyone can see each other's, their own set of weaves, but nobody else can. And that's an important part of, I think, how, like when we get into the discussion of how this may look on screen, right? That regular people cannot see weaves. They just see they results of weaves.
Yeah, they can't even sense. They can't see people holding the one power, embracing it, and they can't see the actual weaves that they're doing. That's going to be really interesting to see how they're going to do that on the show, because obviously, as a viewer, they're going to have to show something. I don't know. Are they going to have to show something to us?
I think when they're learning, like when they're in the tower learning, I feel like maybe they would show the weaves a little bit. I don't feel like they would show it in the beginning because Moraine is so like, but I don't know actually, because they're supposed to be, as far as what they've said, then Moraine is going to be more of like a main character.
Yeah.
If we're in her head, we would see it. But I feel like if we're, especially in the beginning of Eye of the World, which I'll admit I'm rereading the whole series right now and I'm halfway through, it seems like her magic is like, it's so far into them and crazy, like all the stuff she could do that like, I almost feel like we wouldn't see the weaves. We just kind of see what she can do. And then maybe when they're learning it or whoever's like doing the weaves, I feel like maybe with them, we would see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's different levels too, right? People are more powerful in the one power than others. There's a crazy, ridiculous scale in the Wheel of Time companion, which kind of doesn't make sense, but it does. So, yeah, and then you learn that there's different levels of power. And generally, men tend to be more powerful than women, but women tend to be able to be a little bit more dexterous casting their weave and their weaving. And a weave is basically just like a spell that they're taking the different powers, the air, earth, water, all that stuff, and kind of weaving it together to create a desired effect.
I just want to mention that scale again of the list of everybody who's...
Yes.
the power of everyone. So there's like, you know, the people we've heard of basically near the top, and then every other Aes Sedai that's named is on there and like descending, and then there's like 15 numbers with nobody there, and then all the way at the bottom is Morghese.
Morghese. She's like a one like on the
lowest,
scale.
And it says something like, yeah, the lowest amount of power anyone has ever had ever. And it's like, oh, this is so sad.
Minimum known.
But if she makes it work for her,
you know?
She gets to it when she needs it, right?
Right. Yeah, and like the top is like Rand and Morden and... Yeah. I guess Lanfear, right?
Lanfear, Semiraj, and Olivia are the strongest women that they put on the scale.
Right.
And there's a few men who are higher than them. And what, like, I was trying to think, the very first time channeling happens in the book, is that when Moraine heals Tam? Like that we see on screen, so to speak, right? Because
she's channeling during winter.
Oh, yeah, she's actually fighting. Yeah, but you don't see it.
I wonder if they're going to show that, right?
No, I think when you read the first book, like there's definitely an intent for you to not know what is going on, that like the less aware characters, Rand or whomever, are like surprised by effects that things that happen. So I don't know if they're going to show you. I definitely think the way they're going to do when you eventually see the weaves is through learning. I think the first time you're actually going to see the weaves is when Egwene starts to learn how to channel. And then I think towards the end, you'll see them, you know, during, you know, whatever battle at the Eye of the World there happens to be.
Yeah. Okay. So like, and I'm curious if they're, the only reason I think they would show that side of the Winter Night is because, you know, it just makes for great television, you know, cutting back and forth between Emmons Field and then the Rand and Tam's farm, going back and forth between the two battles going on. So we'll see if they're actually going to do that, because I think that for a first episode, I think that's great, because it seems like from what we read, the episode titles, Leave Takings, it's got to be like, that's got to be in the first episode right up front.
I just want to see Luhan hitting people with a frying pan.
I do.
Wasn't it Asbeth?
Yes.
This is Luhan hitting people with a frying pan. It's the only reason you want that scene to be in.
I do want to see that. I hope they put it in. I'll cheer for it if I see it. And I won't be too disappointed if they don't put it in there.
Maybe you see her in the background with a frying pan over her shoulder. And we'll know. Yeah. It'll be for us.
Yeah, just for us. Just for the fans.
I think they could do cool visual things with the not showing of weaves versus the showing of weaves. I always thought it would be cool reading, having to do my rereads of the books, the first time Nynaeve and Mogedion square off in the Panarch's Palace in Tenchiko.
Oh, Tenchiko, yeah.
Yeah, where like they're fighting over a shield, right? Like they're pushing back and forth. But like, if for anybody who would just walk in the room, it's just two women on opposite sides of like a museum floor just staring at each other like really hard. But like, I always thought it would be kind of a cool thing, like if a camera like panned around behind one of their backs and all of a sudden you see like the forces of spirit that are like pushing back and forth. They're like almost dueling with these energies.
You know what I picture when I'm thinking of that?
Yes.
I picture Egg Shen and Lopan.
I know. It's actually the same thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's what we want to see.
That's what I want channeling to be.
Circling around, like you don't see anything, and then like you circle to like a point of view, right? And then you see them, the weave of spirit kind of pushing against the other one. And right. Yeah, you're right. So you obviously have to do something visual, right? Because there's nothing. Otherwise, it's just people standing kind of staring at each other. I know in the beginning, Moraine has like a staff that she kind of uses as like a focus item.
Right.
And then it's just kind of gone. I think she loses it at some point and that's just the end of it.
Right.
So I wonder if they'll even bother putting that in, because it was kind of, she had it and then she didn't. It was just, it really wasn't anything. It was just kind of something she held and kind of used as like, I guess like a focus, which some Aes Sedai do.
Right.
So I imagine they have to do something, and I don't know, you know, what kind of budget they have. So what are they going to do? And is it going to look cheesy or is it going to look good?
Well, I hope it looks good.
I picture like each different power, different color. And right. I'm just seeing, you just see them kind of forming out of the person and kind of weaving together and then turning into whatever it's supposed to be, like a fireball or lightning or healing or something like that. So I think there's a lot they could do with it. It's just kind of question like what they're capable of and what the budget is going to be, because it's going to get crazy where that's like there's just channeling all the time and everywhere later on.
Yeah, I don't think at that point they could show like
yeah.
1,000 weaves happening. Like at that point, you probably just see like once in a while when it's like one person or something like really big happening. But when people are fighting each other, I don't think they'd be able to do that.
Yeah,
I was watching the end of Avengers Endgame the other day as I was coming home because I needed a pick me up. And if you haven't seen it, the portal scene in Avengers Endgame is one of the best things that ever happened on Earth ever. And
okay.
So, but there's, and I don't know if you have seen it, Joe, but at one point, and this is a spoiler for Avengers Endgame, if you're one of the 10 people on Earth who didn't see that movie in the theaters.
I'm one of the 10 people.
All right, so I'm not going to tell you.
No, you can spoil it. Don't worry, I don't mind.
So at one point, a bunch of the sorcerers come out, right? Like Doctor Strange and his fellow sorcerers around the world, they come out and they do like a big pan over like all of the forces of good that are aligned against all the forces of evil. And you just see a bunch of the sorcerers like in that crowd, and they're all like pumping up their shield attacks. That's one of the things that they do is like they, and like that's how I see like these big battles coming up. You don't necessarily need to see the weaves, but you'll see everybody from afar just embracing the source. You'll see like glows of things, and it'll cut to like effects, so you don't need to see like every time they're doing all this crazy weaving yes. stuff. I think a simple like they've embraced the source, there's a glow of power, we know that something's coming, then you see something explode, right? Or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, I could see them doing it in the beginning, like Jen said. In the beginning, they'll show it, the weaves a little bit, and then they'll kind of just, once people understand what's going on, they're just going to be like, all right, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
And glowing, too. I'm curious, too, if they're going to do that, the whole glowing when they embrace the source.
It's a lot of glowing.
If you're going to see them glowing. Yeah. Some of the scenes, they'll just be glowing all over the place.
They kind of have to do something. There's a lot of times where somebody just, like, senses somebody else using the source, and I don't know how you would put that in other than somebody just saying it every time. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that they'll do something like that. I think it depends on the point of view character in the scene, right? So if this is a scene that's focused on Perrin, I don't think you're going to see any weaves. If he's in a scene and channeling's happening, you're just going to see the results of that channeling. But if it's a scene focused on a channeler, I think you will. I think that anything with Matt is much better if he has no idea what's going on with the power ever.
Oh, well, he doesn't want anything to do with it throughout the entire series.
Right. Although I think you may want to show, like, there may be like a scene as the series goes on where you'll see a scene with him from a channeler's point of view, just so you can see the weaves not working. Yeah. You know, like when Elaine's trying to like get back at him and nothing happens, and then she realizes she can like throw a snowball at him or whatever. Have you seen other magic systems in movies or in TV shows or things that you think this is a good reference point for them to kind of touch base on? Like, this is a way that I always pictured it, or I think this would be a cool way to illustrate it in the Wheel of Time series.
The only thing I watch now, more current, the magicians, they do like complicated hand motions. So every spell is like a different kind of a hand movement. And then sometimes you'll see like a power fly out, like depending on what they're doing. But the, like, as far as sensing people, you know, like sensing people who have magic, they don't really have that. That I think would even is going to be harder, just seeing that kind of like if you said, like a glow around them.
Now that's based off a book series. Do you know if that's how it works in the books?
They do. I think I remember them talking about literally like when Quentin first goes to the magic school, he has to like just do finger exercises to get like
I don't really remember. I know they have like all their different talents and stuff, kind of like specific to each one, what they're good at. And but I didn't remember if they actually did that. But yeah, that's what they do for every spell. They have like a different hand motion. But it definitely is different from, like you said, the old stories, even like Lord of the Rings, where Gandalf's just a wizard and can do any, like just does magic, doesn't, nothing happens. He's just, he could just do anything. So.
Yeah.
Gandalf doesn't really do any, he does like three spells in the entire.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, Harry Potter, I guess, is the, maybe one of the first things where they started to get a little bit more in detail about the magic. You know, they had the wands and the different spells. But before that, I can't really think of too many shows or movies where they were really very specific or detailed about the magic, which I think is going to be something that's going to be interesting. And I'm really excited about seeing how they're going to do it, because the whole series revolves around channeling. I mean, the one power is the entire this entire series. That's a big part of it. So I guess this is going to be something that I hope they do a good job of, and I think they will.
Yeah, I have a general comfort level in the fact that I don't think that they would have greenlit the series without having some sort of proof of concept about what this is going to look like, because it's such a big focal point. And unlike Game of Thrones, we discussed in our first episode, magic is very, very essential to this. You can't get around it. You can't move past it. You might be able to get away with less creatures than are in the books, but you can't get away with less magic, because that's the whole driving force of everything. And then eventually the true power comes into play as well, right? The dark one.
Oh, yes.
Essence channeled, I guess.
Not to be confused, with the true source, right. Which the one power comes from, but the true, right? And the true power is, like you said, it's the dark one's power that he has to grant or bestow upon somebody. And we don't really see too many people channel the true power. Obviously, Ishmael does. I think we see Grendel later get some ability to channel before she's done in.
And then, unfortunately, we see...
I think
Rand does.
Right, Rand?
Rand does it a few times.
And the true power is, basically pure evil.
Right. It will... it gives you the saw. And eventually, I don't even know what happens. But I think you cannot... Something very, very bad happens. And it's incredibly addictive. They make references throughout that using the one power is almost an addictive thing. That some people burn themselves out because they can't control how much they love it. People don't feel anywhere near as alive when they're not channeling.
Oh yeah. They constantly mention that in the beginning, when the girls are learning to channel, about how I think when they're in the tower and then they have to when they're bracing the source, using the power, practicing. And then when they release it, they're constantly mentioning how, there's a hole in them now, they're missing it. And it's like a drug.
Right. And that, the true power is even more addictive, and if that's a lower level drug, the true power is black tar heroin.
Jen mentioned about the male half Sidene, how it's tainted. I wonder if they're going to be able to visualize that at all, or it's just going to be all right. Description of, because they describe it as there's an oil slick over the Sidene, and
you seize it. Yeah,
we seize it. That's right. They seize it. They can feel that oil slick of evil, that taint, and that's what drives men crazy, and that's what makes it so dangerous when a man can channel from the Dark One's touch. But the Forsaken, the male Forsaken, have a protection against that. The Dark One, removes the taint or filters it for the male Forsaken, right. So they do not feel the effects of the taint or even experience the taint at all.
Well, that's a thing, too, that I was reading today, again, that when they remove the taint... People are saying they don't know if the male Forsaken would stay with him with the Dark One, because the reason that they worked for him is so they could channel, without the taint. And once the taint is gone, then maybe they weren't really evil to begin with. That was a thing that was in that article.
Yeah, I'm sure I could think of maybe one who probably that might be true for. But yeah, some of them are just, I could definitely think of one who it's definitely not true for.
But some of the Forsaken are evil because they're evil. But the fear of the taint, they say, is keeping them in line, right? Mm-hmm. As they come back, and if that taint is removed, would they necessarily stay in line?
Right.
But they all die anyway, so.
And I don't think we really experience the taint in Eye of the World until the end. No, actually, not even at the end, right? We don't experience the taint at all.
Well, you do, but you don't know it.
We don't get a Rand first-person description of the taint.
No.
At all. Because the Eye of the World is it's a well of pure, clean one power, so there's no taint on it.
Right. Yeah, so when he is aware that he is channeling, that is clean. It's not until, the second book where you start to get a sense of what the taint is like. They talk about what the taint is, but you don't get a real sense of it. And it's not until later books that you really see what the effects of it are.
That's right. There's one other thing, too, I wanted to bring up. Oh, so channeling sickness. So that was one last thing I wanted to talk about. So channeling sickness is basically, it's a condition. I'm going to read this right out of the wiki here. Is a condition experienced by people born with the ability to channel, but who are unguided in learning how to do so. As such, these wilders, we're going to hear that term probably, unintentionally and unknowingly use the One Power unsafely, which generally causes a slow sapping illness that eventually results in death. If a trained channeler reaches a person with the channeling sickness in time, the afflicted person can often be saved. So we see the channeling sickness in Eye of the World. We see Rand experiences it numerous times in the first book. I believe there's about 3 or 4 times where he experiences it. So do you think that... So Rand does channel in the first book. It's kind of implied. Do you think they're actually going to show the whole visual effect, or are they going to kind of keep it off so that way to kind of keep the story more mysterious? Are they not going to show it?
I feel like they can't show it. I feel like there ruins any kind of mystery about which of the three boys they're looking for. And especially if you're making Moraine the focal point, then you won't know which of the three boys that they're looking for. That gives you a possibility they can be anybody. Like, if you pay attention when Moraine explains the channeling sickness, you may be able to put together, hey, something happened and then this happened. And like something else happened and this happened. I think Rand might be channeling. But they don't come right out and say it. And if you don't put that together, you don't definitively know until the end when he does, when he realizes he's doing it. I think that you won't see Rand channel until he is at the Eye of the World.
Okay. I agree with you. And do you think, so you made me think of something else too, another question. So in the book, it's in the Eye of the World, it's obvious that Rand is the main character and he's the one that, you know, the whole story is going to be about. From the very beginning, basically. Do you think they're going to go that route in the show, or do you think they're going to kind of keep it more mysterious until, you know, and let it build up towards the end?
There's the one point in Eye of the World where I think the first time they're actually fighting the Trollocs and they're all yelling out like war cries, and Matt yells out that thing in a different language for the first time.
The old tongue.
So, Rand is like thinking, oh, maybe it's him that they want. So I don't know if they'll like...
Yeah, maybe he's reborn. He's a reborn king or whatever.
I don't know if they're going to like try to throw you off like that. But I mean, when you're reading the book, it's the first half of the book is Rand's point of view. So it's kind of obvious like who it is.
He's the one who finds out that he's not born.
Right.
His dad's not his dad.
Like, no, that's probably not true. Nynaeve's trying to tell him like, no, that's probably not true. But he's like,
Right.
But, I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm interested in that. Yeah, I'm interested if they're going to try to make it a little bit more mysterious in the show or not, since it seems like it's going to revolve a little bit more, focus more on Moraine. So I'm curious. That'll be interesting, too.
I wonder if it's really going to focus on Moraine, or if they just said it was going to focus on Moraine to try to get people interested in it more. I hate to say that, but I'm not like, oh, this is about a girl, and then, like, she's in it, but not the main character, like, at all. So when they put that out, I was like, oh, they're just changing it. So like,
I think they're gonna, because she's kind of knows what's going on. She's the only character who kind of knows what's going on throughout the whole book. So I think maybe they're kind of gonna focus more on her point of view of the story, and at least in the first season, I think that's what they were kind of getting at. Not that it's gonna only be about her, but I think it's gonna be more kind of told from her perspective, and she's kind of gonna be focal point of the show.
I just feel like there's so much information that she has
that she never shares
that we're not gonna get.
Well, she also doesn't share anything,
right?
Which is like frustrating throughout the whole series. It's just like, Moraine, if only you told people things that you know or planned on doing, it would have been much easier.
If she's like the main character, how could you not know? I don't know. That's why I feel like they're the main characters, because they're just learning everything as we learn it, you know, like just how it is in the book. So I don't understand how she could really be the, like, how we're following her when there's so much she had. Even when she's like talking in Eye of the World, when you hear her talking to Lan, she's saying all these things that when you're first reading it, you have no idea what she's talking about, you know, and then you find out about it later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
I think it's more, I don't think they're going to change things around, or like maybe they'll give you a little bit more of a backstory or scenes with Lan that you wouldn't normally see. But I think that more than anything else, she's not a main character in the books. She's a secondary character. You know, compared to this, these are books that have like whatever 8th, 9th, 10th level importance of characters who are important. But I think that she'll be a main character. She's going to be a focal point, if not for plot development, but of scene. They're going to focus on her telling the story of Mon Etherin. And they're going to focus on, like, they're going to be looking at her. They're going to be like in awe of her, and let you be in awe of her too. And they definitely want a show where gender dynamics are reversed. They want that's like, I think, a big selling point, right? So they want to kind of have, this is a woman and she is in charge no matter what. Like all these mighty warriors, they bow down to her, like, you know, that sort of a thing. So I think it's more of a presence. And then it'd be necessarily like changing the story dynamics around to make her of primary importance to the plot. Like, I think whatever point when they split up, you know, if we say it's after episode 2 or 3 or whatever, I think episode 3 we said, Rand and Matt are going to be by themselves. Perrin's going to be by himself. They're going to have Perrin and Egwene to be by themselves. Like, they'll have their own plot lines and become at that point the focal point of the scenes that they're in, right? But, you know, and even then, if they can do that at that point, you know, like, Perrin is going to have magical powers. Rand's, you know, Rand's going to have his sword, but Matt's going to have the dagger, and he's going to have stuff going on with him, and they'll give you, they can still tease that along a little bit about who exactly is the person, or maybe it's everybody. You know, maybe all three of them are important, which is true, yeah. Even though you don't know that. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I'm very curious to see. This is, it's such a big part of the series, that's why I'm curious as to what they're going to do, if they're going to do it right. I think they're going to do a good job with it. I think that they know what channeling is all about, and they know all the basics. I mean, we discussed it here, and I think they're going to try to incorporate as much of it as they can, at least in the beginning. And then, like you said, maybe as we finally, everybody knows what channeling is at this point, we kind of don't need to do all of the details of it and just kind of go right into it. So just to, you know, for obviously sake of storytelling and television, that they wouldn't, you know, have to do every single weave every single time. Like you said, some of the scenes we just have, everybody would be glowing and it would be, you know, yeah, physically impossible to see what the hell's going on.
Right.
All right. Good discussion. I like the ideas.
All right.
Thank you, guys. That was some great insights. I think we got a lot more to talk about with other topics. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We have a Twitter account, so follow us at our Twitter account. It's at Aran Talk. Again, don't yell at me for the name. I explained it last episode. That's at Aran Talk. For our Twitter account, follow us, you know, like us, comment on us. We're also on, we are now on Apple Podcasts. Congratulations, everyone. Hey. So we're on Apple, we're on Google, we're on Stitcher, and we're on Spotify. So follow us on one of those, like us, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. We love that. Tell your friends about us. Post, repost, retweet. We also have an email account. You can direct message us through Twitter, or you can email us. Our email address is talkwotepodcast@protonmail.com. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us how much you love our voices. thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next time. Or we'll hear you next time. What do you say on a podcast?
You'll hear us next time.
You'll hear us next time. Thanks, Jen.